What's up everyone, this is Dariusz Kalbarczyk, co-founder of MG Poland, JS Poland, AngularMaster.dev and WorkshopFest.dev. Welcome back to the AngularMaster podcast. Today we've got a special guest from San Francisco, USA. Talented software developer, legendary speaker, co-creator of Angular, now helping to build a better web with Cloudflare. Ladies and gentlemen, Igor Minar. Hi, Igor. How are you?
Hey, Darek. I'm good. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. So, for those who don't know you yet, please tell us about yourself and what you do.
Ooh, that's a complicated question. I'm Igor. I would describe myself as a software engineer at heart. I love building stuff. I love building software programs, infrastructure, but also I love working with people and I love building things that help people. So throughout my career, I've been building web infrastructure that supports communities. That's how I started at Sun Microsystems. Then I went on to Google and spent almost 12 years building this thing called Angular, together with Mishko and the team, from the very beginning until late 2021, when I left Google, I wouldn't say that I left Angular. I left Google and I'm still collaborating with the Angular team, but just helping from the sidelines now. Today I'm at Cloudflare. I help build our development platform that I'm hoping will superpower the next generation of web applications.
How did you get into programming and what drew you to front-end development?
Front-end development, I didn't get to until much later. I think early, I was lucky enough that my dad used to work at I think oil refinery is the best description, back in Slovakia or Czechoslovakia back in the days. And he was electrician slash like computer data center maintenance staff, engineer. Not a computer guy, but an electrician. And sometimes he would bring me to work and I was like 5 years old or so. And I just remember like walking around this big machines that were super loud and they were doing things that I didn't understand. And then they would sit me at the terminal to like spend some time and just get out of the way. And I would do ASCII art, not knowing what I was doing. I was doing ASCII art in a terminal, just drawing things on the computer screen. It was just so fascinating. But I didn't really program. I started programming much later. My parents saw that I was attracted to computers, and computers were already something that was interesting for the future. So my parents found a school in a nearby town that was specializing on programming. And this was high school, secondary grammar school, depending on where you're from. And it was, that's where I was first exposed to like real programming, Pascal, and just a lot of diagramming and I don't know, like, I forget it was Bacchus Naur form programming, like these diagrams that were like pre-UML diagrams and stuff. We programmed on a paper with pencils because computers were not around. Or you would program on a piece of paper and then you would bring your homework to school and you would retype it to the computer and see if it worked. Like that's how we learned. Or our teachers would be the compilers that look at the paper and like, no, there's a semicolon missing here. This is not going to work. It was funny times. But it also made you appreciate just a lot of algorithms and just like basic fundamentals in programming. After that, I went to University of Economics in Bratislava, Slovakia, which at the time I was like kind of questioning the decision because it was like a lot of like applied programming and information systems and it wasn't very challenging school, to be honest with you, but it did two things. The school exposed me to a lot of business stuff, accounting, marketing, management, and just things that I was like, why am I even learning this? And now looking back, I'm like, I can do my own taxes because I understand how it all works. So I'm grateful for a lot of those boring courses that I had to take. And the second thing that the school gave me was a lot of free time, which I used to play games and program. So I self-taught myself Java, which was not taught at the school. And I got a job in just doing like PHP programming, not anything super fancy. But that led to an internship with Sun Microsystems in California. And it's a crazy story. We're not going to go into it now, but I was invited to come to California for a year to do Java programming for this one random team. Not a Java team, but a team that was using Java to build applications to secure internal networks. So I came to Sun, and I loved California, I loved Silicon Valley, I loved Sun. So I actually stayed longer. The internship was extended for another half a year or so, and then it turned into a full-time job. And essentially, I never left. I came back to visit my family many, many times. But I permanently just stayed in the Silicon Valley, and I'm still trying to get out, but not really rushing, because it's not a bad place to be. It's an expensive place to be, but it's not a bad place to be.
Tell us more about this interesting internship.
Let's keep it short. So I was looking for a job, and this was like, I was finishing my university. There were all these recruiters on campus, and there were different workshops and job fairs. I was actively interviewing with different companies in Bratislava, and my intention was to stay in Bratislava and work for one of the tech companies in Bratislava, because there were many, and some of them were local, some of them were international. Accenture, I remember I interviewed with Accenture with their, I don't know, it was some like special projects team or something. They were very interested in me joining, and that was my top choice. But then I went to this job fair at one of the other universities, and Sun Microsystems had a presentation there. Recruiters were doing presentation. They were like, oh, come to Brno in Czech Republic. We are building a campus there for Sun Microsystems, and we need more people. So they were really trying to recruit people to Czech Republic and to Brno campus. And I liked Sun because I love Java. I've been like a year, maybe 2 years into my journey of learning Java, and coming from Pascal, C++, PHP background, like this Java thing, like actually makes sense. And it's really well organized and thought through, and I was a big fan of Thinking in Java, the book that was written by, I think, Bruce Eckel. The book was just amazing, because there were all these examples, and he was doing test-driven development to prove that the examples worked in the book, and it was just fascinating on so many levels. Anyway, I was fascinated by Java and attracted to it. So Sun Microsystems was a big draw for me, but I didn't want to go to Brno. And during the presentation, they mentioned, oh, by the way, and it was just like a fleeting comment that somebody made during the presentation, like, by the way, we also have this internship opportunities in California, and they are unusual because they're kind of like year-long exchange programs. So if any of you are interested, just let us know. So after the presentation, I went down to the recruiter and just handed them a resume. They're like, hey, I would be interested I just spent the summer in California because I was already dating my spouse, and she's from California. She is from California. So we went to visit her family the summer prior to this. This was like 2005 or late 2004 or something like that. So I give them my resume. I'm like, hey, I wouldn't mind. I was in California just last summer, and I wouldn't mind going back. It's beautiful there. And they're like, yeah, we'll think about it, and we'll let you know. And we're like, nothing happened for like weeks and weeks. And I was like, okay, this is not happening. So I started thinking about all these other opportunities, and I was like pretty much decided to go to Accenture and being like one of the consultants and travel the world to do random projects. When one morning, my phone rang. This is like, yeah, I was still in bed. I was just waking up. My phone rings. I pick up the phone and like, imagine this, like I'm sitting on a bed in my like t-shirt and underwear, just like, you know, getting out of the bed. My phone rings, I pick it up, and on the other side, there's like, good morning. This is Martin England from Sun Microsystems. Can we do the interview now? And I'm just like, excuse me? Like, yeah, I have all my colleagues on the phone and we are ready to interview you for that internship that you applied. I'm like, okay. So I just moved to the kitchen, and I was like literally sitting there in like whatever I had on as I was sleeping. And I was like, let's do this. So they interviewed me, and I guess it went well because eventually I got an offer from them to come to California. And I hesitated, actually. I hesitated quite a bit because it meant leaving Slovakia and my family for a year. And I was like, and the job wasn't super appealing, but it was the fact that it was Sun Microsystems and it was in California, and it was like an opportunity that very few people get that made it super appealing. I knew that I would just be building applications that were not probably like, it would like support kind of applications, but also I was an intern, so.
You're listening, Angular Master Podcast. Listen, code, repeat. Everything you need to know to become an Angular super developer.
Was it a regular technical interview?
It was a regular technical interview, but also like managing priorities and behavioral, like it was all combined. And it was like five people on the call, which was like super intimidating. Because it was the whole team, that there was a network security group at Sun Microsystems. That was the team, and they were looking for interns to come and build web applications for them to manage like the internal systems and security of the systems. So yeah, the job and the applications were not super challenging. You know, it was typical CRUD applications, enterprise applications, and they had a bunch of databases and they just needed UIs to be built for them. So, but the fact that it was Java and it was Sun and California, I was like, okay, let's do this. So, after a lot of hesitation, I had even my manager at the time, the future managers from Sun, he had to talk me into the job. Like we were on a call later, second call, when he gave me an offer. And I was like, yeah, this sounds really good, but I'm not sure. And then he like had to convince me. And like looking back, I'm just like, how stupid was I not to just take it outright? Like who gets an opportunity like that? So he had to talk me into it. I'm like, hey, okay, I think I'll do it. So I did it. I came and that was that. And I had a blast. I met amazing people. I learned a lot and I had a lot of autonomy to do things. And I guess I did okay because they extended the internship and then gave me a full-time offer. I transitioned to a different team. At the time when I got the full-time offer actually came from a different team at Sun. That was focused on building external web infrastructure, primarily to support all of the social community building efforts and open source community building efforts at Sun. Because Sun was a pioneer in open source in many ways. Lots of blogging infrastructure and like blog was the primary marketing tool. I personally was in charge of Wiki, so we built probably the first major Wiki that was meant to support community building for a particular corporation. So it was all Confluence, it was white-labeled Confluence, so we were working very closely with Atlassian. In the early days of Atlassian, when they were just innovating like crazy and they were like Confluence back then, like now I don't think everybody feels great about Confluence and where Confluence is, but this was 14 years ago when Confluence was on fire and they were like shipping features and it was just breakthrough after breakthrough. So I remember that I was the guy, when I talked to them, they kind of liked me, but they didn't like me because I stood out and it was different from all the other customers they had, because I was in charge of probably the largest public facing Confluence instance. We were getting a ton of traffic and Confluence was struggling to keep up with it. So I always had like this like most obscure issues, whether it was performance or security and scalability, and they were like, yeah, but we are really like targeting small teams and internal instances, and you're like, you're not the best use case. I'm like, yeah, but you know, we like what you're doing. And so it was interesting times. But then Oracle came, and Oracle kind of they acquired Sun, and it was a big culture shock. And while I loved the culture and the values at Sun, I did not appreciate the values and the culture at Oracle. So I didn't last very long. I think I was like, I'm going to last 6 months, and I think I lasted only five and left. And I went to Google. I went to Google because at the time I was already familiar with Mishko Heveri from Angular, now at Quick. And he, like a year prior to me coming to Google, he showed me what was a prototype of Angular. It was not even called Angular back then yet. I was like, yeah, this is cool. I wouldn't mind working on this. And he was trying to recruit me. I was like, no, like Sun is pretty good. I really like it here. But then Sun disappeared overnight. So I was like, yeah, it's time to move. And I always, even with Java and web, building web interfaces with Java, I felt like Java was not the best way to build web interfaces because it was just too heavy. The latency to see the results of whatever you coded was like measured in minutes. And I just wanted something nimble, and I just felt so weird about writing Java code to produce strings that then appear in the browser rendered as DOM. I was like, you know, like too many layers of indirection. This is super weird. So when I saw Angular, I was like, wow, this is very radically different approach. Like, you don't deal with strings. You don't even deal with server. Everything is on the client side, and you're using this odd language JavaScript, which I didn't know and didn't quite appreciate back then. But in the lead up to the Google interviews and stuff, I picked up this book, JavaScript, The Good Parts. And I was like, yeah, I can read through this book if this is all it takes. So I read through the book, and I was like so confused by all the like prototypical inheritance and just like crazy things in JavaScript and all of the like interesting features that especially back then the language had, right? Because the language was very much less mature than what it is now. But I was like, you can do test-driven development even with JavaScript, and yeah, you don't have the types, but you write so much less code that if you write tests, it kind of like evens out, like you have the same safety net. Long story short, I eventually joined Mishko on the journey to build Angular, and I was the second person on the team to work on Angular full time.
What was the version of Angular at the time?
Oh, there was no versioning. When I came to Google in August 2011, I don't think it was even on GitHub yet. Like, there was like some kind of Mercurial repository somewhere, I believe, or it was just at some point, as I was joining or just after I joined, and I think it was Mishko who took the original Mercurial repository and imported it into GitHub and converted it to Git. And that was also another like Git versus Mercurial that like at the time there was a big competition, and I was the Mercurial fan. I was like, yeah, this makes much more sense and it's so much better. But then GitHub pushed everyone's hand, and GitHub was just so much better, even though Git wasn't as good as Mercurial. Anyway, long story short, I joined. There was nothing. There was just FTP server with built JavaScript bundles, and that was Angular. No versioning, nothing, because there were no users. There was, at the time, the only user using Angular was an internal team called Google Feedback, and they were building an internal admin interface. And they, just a few months prior to me joining, started converting that application to Angular. So, or what turned out to be later Angular. So there were no users, no usage. And when I came, we cut. I was like, well, we need to start versioning, because otherwise, how are we going to tell people what to use, and how will they know what they're using? So I think in September, I cut the first version, which was 0.9. Because by then we were like, well, we already have a customer. This somewhat works. So we are not very far from 1.0. You know, we were thinking like, oh, maybe a few more months and we'll be at 1.0. So the thinking was like, oh yeah, just cut 0.9 to like express that this is not a complete alpha, but it's also not fully ready. And of course we ran out of 0.9 numbers, so we have to go to 0.10 before we finally went to 1.0. And that whole process took like 2 years. It wasn't a few months. It was I think Angular 1.0 was 2012, if I'm not mistaken. So is that right? 2013? I don't know. See, I'm losing track of dates. But it was good year and a half, 2 years worth of work, if I remember correctly, to get to 1.0. Mishko had a motivation to build applications in a different way. And Angular, as I mentioned, when I first saw Angular, that was like 2009, was the first time I saw a prototype of Angular. It was his hobby project. He was just hacking on it in his free time. And he was just showing friends like, oh, look, like, this is the crazy thing like I'm working on. I don't know what it's going to be, but look how amazing it is. And, you know, if you know Mishko, like, he can be very, very persuasive, and very, very passionate about things he's working on. So it was very appealing to many people that he showed it to. And at Google, during his day job, he worked on a GWT application, Google Web Toolkit, application that was using GWT, which was this Google Feedback. And the team was just struggling. They just couldn't get the features out because everything took forever and it was very difficult and complicated and verbose. And the UI wasn't great. And at some point, he just went to his boss, and Mishko being Mishko, he was like, this is stupid. I have this other side project that I'm working on, and I could just take everything that we built, which was at that point like few person hours of work, person years of work, and I could just rewrite this myself in 2 weeks and with this thing Angular, and it's going to be way better, and the teams are going to be flying. And the boss was Brad Green, who was a manager for many, many years. And he was like, yeah, just go do it. So Mishko, and then of course, like so many things are like so matched the pattern. Like, it was not 2 weeks, it was 3 or 4 weeks, but still, like, he did it. He did recreate most of the application in JavaScript and what turned out to be later Angular. And that was enough for the team to be convinced that this is a better way to build applications. And back then, managers and directors at Google had enough autonomy to be like, well, this makes sense. Let's just explore it. The risks are not super high. So let's just go and see, let this team do this crazy thing and we'll see where it leads. And at that point, they needed more people to actually make it a proper effort. And that's why they were interested in hiring me, and I was interested in coming to Google and specifically work on Angular. Like, that was my part of the deal. Like, I'm not coming to Google to work on a random project. I'm coming to Google to work on Angular because I believed in it back then already. And yeah, little did we know what was coming. We had no idea.
What makes Angular a popular choice across various industries?
Going from nothing to something in no time, and the joy that people felt when they were using Angular, AngularJS to be clear, Angular 1.0. The joy and the productivity gains and the lack of verbosity, ability to just see results very quickly, ability to prototype, ability to have cross-functional teams where designers could be true team members of the team. Because with Java, designers were on the sidelines. They were creating things in Photoshop and InDesign, or I'm not sure what the tools were at the time, creating either images or vector graphics. And then there was a programmer who would translate all of that to the best of their abilities to Java. But designers were out of the loop. So with Angular, that changed because AngularJS was very much HTML-centric and very little JavaScript, which opened the possibility for designers that had a little bit of web experience with HTML, CSS, JavaScript participate in the development process. And that was revolutionary at the time because there weren't too many. I don't know if anybody else who enabled that for, especially for serious applications. Like this was these were the days when jQuery was the number one solution. And jQuery was mostly used to enhance server-side rendered application. So you would have a team that built Java application or PHP application, then they would sprinkle a little bit of jQuery here and there to add interactivity, but the application was not a JavaScript application. It was just a few scripts that added some effects or validation or few things like that. So with Angular, we changed things quite radically, and we allowed people to write their application with just JavaScript, HTML, and CSS knowledge, and that allowed web designers to participate in the process.
Can you discuss key Angular milestones at Google?
Google hiring me? just kidding. No, like in the early days, just the key milestone was the approval or the buy-in to start rebuilding this application, Google feedback with Angular, or the early prototype of what turned out to be Angular. I think that was a key milestone. The next one was probably when DoubleClick, which was a big acquisition by Google. They started rewriting their existing DoubleClick application with a Google-friendly technology, because they were acquisition from like the Microsoft tech stack. So it was like .NET, a lot of .NET, WPF, and I don't know, all the technologies that Microsoft has built for supporting web development. And that was not compatible with how Google builds stuff. So they were asked to rewrite everything in a Google-friendly way, which meant Java and some kind of web front-end solution that was compatible with Google way of doing things. And of course, GWT was, GWT was the solution that many people flocked to, but this team just had allergic reaction to GWT, because they were like, no, like we want data binding, we want all these things, we care about productivity and testability, and we care about just building good interfaces, and they felt like it was not possible to do with the technologies that were proposed to them. So through a lot of like random interesting events, they came across Angular, and they prototyped Angular for a few days, and the team was like, this is it, like this is what we are using, Google's building this, so let's go with this. And they were our first major customer at Google. And when they reached out to us, Mark Jacobs, the manager at the time, he was the one who took the risk to bet on this technology. And initially, they invited us to come to New York. So it was, I think, four of us. I don't know. It was me, Mishko, Brad, and maybe Vojta. I don't know if Vojta was on the team already or not at the time. They invited us to New York, and we had this like 2-day-long session. We were hacking on things and just trying to figure out whether we could trust each other. And they were really trying to figure out, like, who are these crazy people from Mountain View? Would they be good partners, and can we bet our future on them? And we just clicked. We liked how bold they were and how much they care about productivity and the user experience. And they liked, I don't want to speak for them, but I think they liked the passion that we had and the ability to listen to their requests and just build features on the spot. There were times when we would fly to New York because they had a problem, and we would just fix it there for them. And we would ship the production, and we would fly back to Mountain View. Because they were such a major customer. Like, DoubleClick is a big, big force in the ads industry. And this was the application through which all of the campaigns were managed. And it was all AngularJS from, like, prior to 1.0. Like, they were on 0.9, kind of a version of Angular. That's where they started. So that was a big milestone. After that, probably 1.0 was the next big one. It took way more effort than what we thought it would. So yesterday, when I saw the Quick team announce that Quick 1.0, I was so happy for them, because most people just don't realize how much effort it goes into making 1.0 of anything significant, anything big. And just the risks you take, and you know, to the last hour, just keep on like, okay, one more thing, just one more fix. Let's make this breaking change because we won't be able to make it. And that was the case. Like, the team was shipping breaking changes until like morning before they ship 1.0, just so that after 1.0, things are more stable. It was the same with Angular. Like, we just kept on, like, if you look through the Git changelog, you'll probably see like there were some risky changes that landed just prior to 1.0, because we just needed to get the last minute stuff in, and it was now or never. You know, that's how you feel. Like, there's always possibility in the future, but when you've been working on something for several years, it's usually like it's now or never. So that was a big one. And then things kind of took off from there. Community responded very positively. GitHub got out of control, which was a big problem, because just we were a small team. We were, for a long time, it was just three of us that were working on AngularJS, and at the time there were already tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of developers depending on AngularJS. And then things kind of like, we went through lots of growing struggles and growing pains, you know, scalability, both, you know, how to make things work at Google, how to make things work for the external ecosystem, how to push things forward, how to not stagnate, but how to do it in a way that is not too breaky. And this is where, like, especially in the early days, we did not fully understand. We thought we knew, but we didn't fully understand the pain that breaking changes were causing. And we learned about it very quickly, because it was our team that was mostly responsible for resolving all the breaking changes within Google. So we would go to New York, we would fly to New York and spend 3 days hacking day and night to get DoubleClick over all the breaking changes that we made. And we're like, crap, like, that's painful. That's how you learn. That's how you learn how, like, small decisions can have big impact. And the community kept on growing, the popularity kept on growing, and very quickly, I'm going to fast forward through a lot because I don't want to bore everybody, but very quickly I learned that the AngularJS, while it was revolutionary in many ways, there was a ceiling that we started to see, and the community didn't see it yet, but it was clear to us that the end is coming sooner or later, and we need to start thinking about how to break through that ceiling. And the ceiling was mostly around, like, some of the Scalability, that was the main one. Like people kept on, Angular enabled people to build bigger and richer applications, and people did. They started building way bigger applications than we ever imagined that they would. And the applications were way more interactive than what we expected that they would be interested in building. So that resulted in two kinds of pains. One is the user experience pain, where applications were starting to get slow. And there's the infamous like dirt checking and digest cycle discussion around like, oh, why is Angular slow? Like too many watchers. And you know, like all of like many people from the Angular community would relate to those pains. And the second kind of pain was in terms of scalability of the code base and the teams. Because when in the early days, most of the teams working on Angular applications were either solo developers or they were small teams of like 2, 3, 4, 5 front-end engineers. Like back in the days, you would not have dozens of engineers working on the front-end because most applications were back-end heavy. And it was the wave of frameworks like AngularJS and others that really made it possible and interesting and also necessary to staff bigger teams, because business need was like, oh, everybody's building much better UIs. These UIs are faster, more interactive. We need to do the same. How do you do it? You start adopting these new technologies. And these new technologies allow you to move a lot of what used to be on the back end to the front end, especially to the client side. But now you have so much code on the client side that you cannot just have 2, 3 front end engineers working on this. You actually need team or a collection of teams working on the front end, depending on the size of the application. If these teams are building applications in a way that doesn't scale in terms of code base size and structure, you know, how to divide the work across teams to be able to collaborate on this big code base, it ran into troubles. And that's what we saw. We saw that people were craving type checking. They were craving more automation and tooling. And JavaScript was not there. And JavaScript was not capable of doing those things. There were various attempts, but it was all just heuristics and it was unreliable and just didn't work well. And one thing that we saw already back then was at Google saw this much earlier than anybody else. So Google created this program, this tool called JS Compiler, externally known as Clojure Compiler. Clojure Compiler was a JavaScript compiler that did two things. It type checked the code, for which it required very verbose type annotations provided through JS doc comments. And the second thing that JS Compiler did is it enabled statically optimizations, minification, dead code elimination, tree shaking, code splitting, many things that were like, most people were like, I don't need this. Like, just don't bother me with this stuff. Back in like 2010, around 11, it was already the norm at Google. And we saw that this is how Google scaled big JavaScript code bases at the cost of verbosity and a lot of like developer experience sacrifices. And we explored this compiler, Clojure Compiler, for use of Angular, and we just couldn't make it work in a way where we would keep up with we would preserve the spirit of Angular and still be able to do type checking and do this kind of optimizations. So that led us to explore other ways. One of them was TypeScript. In 2014, we made this bold announcement that Angular's building TypeScript, which is not a language. And we tried to like be very clear that we're not trying to build a language. We're just trying to enhance JavaScript by adding metadata annotations and type checking. Those were two things. And it was all built on top of ES6, or what turned out to be ES 2015. And fortunately, there was this awesome team at this company that you would not expect that came to help us, and it was the Microsoft team called TypeScript. They reached out and like, hey, like you're kind of trying to do the same thing that we're already doing. Like, how about we just join forces and work together? And we were just like, wait, but you're from Microsoft. Like, how? Wait, what? But we were interested in talking to them because TypeScript was interesting, but they were not really doing like the open source in the way we were doing, because we were all on GitHub and everything was open source. And they were like, oh, is this like Microsoft ploy or what's going on here? But the more we talked and we had lots of conversations, the more we were amazed by just how the team was like us. So yeah, we started collaborating with the TypeScript team. We actually collaborated with more than TypeScript team. Around the same time, we reached out to the Flow team, we reached out to the JS compiler team, and we were just trying to figure out, and we worked very closely with the Dart team that was at Google, tried to figure out like which of the language teams would be the best partner for us to build a more scalable Angular. Because we knew that we wanted TypeChicken to be built, and we knew that we wanted to reduce some of the verbosity through metadata annotations, a way to annotate code so that our compiler could look at it and be like, oh, this is what the developer's trying to do. Let us maybe generate a lot of code, a lot of boilerplate code behind the scenes, or generate optimized code that developers would struggle to write by hand over and over at scale. So we were looking for partners, and through lots of trials and errors and different prototypes, TypeScript team came out to be the most reliable partner for us. It was a very unusual relationship that made many, especially once we made the big announcements and like we made the decision ourselves. Like, this was a purely TypeScript engineering team working with Angular engineering team, and the engineers made a decision that this is the right choice for the future. At least that's what we believed. And the TypeScript team was happy because they were looking for validation. This was back in the days when Microsoft didn't have the best reputation, and TypeScript was dismissed and hated upon, not because of what it was, but because of which company it was coming from. So the team knew that they were onto something. They knew that they had solutions to problems that developers face day to day in the JavaScript developers, but they could not get developers to take a look at them because Microsoft was behind TypeScript. And the fact that we endorsed them and we decided to bake TypeScript support into Angular at the peak of AngularJS era was a huge validation for them. And it was met with mixed reaction in the community, in the Angular community, because on one hand, a lot of the AngularJS community back then, this was 2015 is when we announced it. A lot of the AngularJS community back then was coming from the .NET world, because Microsoft just shut down Silverlight. The .NET stack was not the most productive one. So many of the people were just fleeing that whole space, and AngularJS was a viable alternative. And people were like, I'm kind of familiar. Like, I understand data binding. I understand many of these concepts, and nobody else is offering them. And I can put up with JavaScript because there's not that much of it. A lot of it was just template-driven development, so you'd write HTML more than JavaScript. So many people from the Microsoft world felt at home in the JavaScript and Angular/JavaScript ecosystem. So when we announced the TypeScript support, these people were cheering on because they were like, this is exactly what we need. We want the productivity of Angular, but we also want the tooling from Microsoft, because, you know, VS Code with Visual Studio with all of its flaws, like, it does automate a lot of stuff. The auto completion helps, the automated documentation helps. So that crowd was cheering. And then there were like hardcore JavaScript developers that were like, wait, what are you doing? You want us to stop writing JavaScript? Well, JavaScript is the only true language. And those people were not happy. So I think on average, the TypeScript announcement was well received, but there were definitely people that were not happy, either because we were moving away from JavaScript, or because we were collaborating with Microsoft and they saw that as a betrayal of some kind? Yeah, that was like one of the pivotal moments for Angular, because it informed many of the future things. It allowed our team to drop attempts to build this language that was not a language called AdScript, and focus just on the framework. It allowed the TypeScript team to get a lot of recognition and get people to take a look at TypeScript. I think if you talk to them, they will tell you that they saw huge spikes in traction and adoption of TypeScript after the announcement. And it was the Angular community onboarding onto TypeScript. There was hundreds of thousands of developers that we guided to TypeScript. That was a huge boost for TypeScript and a huge boost for that community. And eventually, they also managed to add React support into TypeScript, so that was yet another boost. So they did all these like smart moves to leverage existing communities and explain the benefits that TypeScript was bringing to them, and customize TypeScript to make it work for Angular and to make it work for React. And that it's no surprise to me that TypeScript is where it is now. But it was the Angular team who took the risk and met the initial hate. They're like, well, how do you dare? and people were like, for the longest time, we're like, well, this is a mistake. Like, this is the end of Angular. But now when you look, like, TypeScript is pretty much the default. Like, it's the people that not use TypeScript today that are the odd ones, not the ones that are using TypeScript. I'm kind of happy about how that worked out. Definitely not something we intended. It was not. We were just trying to do the right thing. We felt like this was the right thing. That's what we did. So after this, the next big milestone was probably around Angular 2.0 release. It didn't go the way we wanted it to go. We struggled quite a bit to get it out. The project, like just like 1.0, like the scope was, scope creep is a problem. Complexity. But also there were additional problems, and I'm not going to go into all of them now, but the team grew significantly, and with the growth, like rapid growth in the team, sometimes if managed well, that can help the team do more, but sometimes it can actually slow the team down, because sometimes more people is actually not better. And I'm not saying that it was bad people, it's just if you don't manage the growth of the team well and make sure that everybody's aligned and everybody like is working, pulling the same direction, then that can actually result in slowing down the project. And there were like definitely some of that was happening. And we did struggle to get 2.0 out. We were a little too ambitious, a little too naive about what we could do. And there were other factors that were out of our control. We were asked to support Dart. We personally didn't want to, but it was something that we had to do. And it was the right thing for Google at the time. And that this was like one of the moments where Google got involved in the story of Angular in a way that it hasn't before, and slowed us down, caused problems. And we just had to work through all of that. Ship 2.0. I think by the time we were shipping 2.0, like almost everybody on the team was burnt out. And we're just like, let's just get this out. Like we're done. Like we cannot continue thinking about this anymore. So we shipped 2.0 knowing that it was not the thing that we wanted, but it was the best thing that we could do at the time, given what the time, the skills we had, the what was doable at the time, given the state of the ecosystem. Everything was so immature. Angular 2 was based on ES 2015, and ES 2015 and we shipped it in 2016. So it was like 1 year after the spec was done. There was like, it was not even implemented in browsers yet. We had to rely on Tracer and like all kinds of not well supported and staffed tools to just even run things in browser. So there were like so many obstacles. And looking back, it's like, it's kind of amazing that it even worked at all, considering everything was work in progress. Nothing was stable. And we didn't have the foresight to understand like, oh, we need to manage all of this risk and we need to cut scope and all of that stuff. We just didn't know better. So after we launched 2.0, the next thing we felt very strongly about, or at least I personally feel very strongly about, is like, this is not it. This is not the thing that I want to go around and promote. And we need to start thinking about how to evolve Angular. Like, that was like the day of the announcement, like the number one priority. Okay, what's next? How do we evolve this? Because this is not the final destination. This is just a bad starting point. And I came up with this crazy schema to put Angular on like December. It was like a combination of things. I knew that we need to make breaking changes. And I knew that we cannot get away. There's no way we can get away with breaking changes, because like Angular 2.0 was already a huge breaking change. And the transition from Angular 1 to 2 was very hard. And I was like, there's no way we can now. It's like, oh, this was a mistake. You know, now we're going to have Angular 3 and it's going to be very different yet again. I'm like, no, that's not going to apply. Also, there was like, we shipped a router that we were not happy with as 2.0. And quickly after the launch, we built another router and we shipped this as the Angular router 3.0, which was very confusing. And we had like all of these packages, and some of them were 2.0, some of them were 3.0. It was like constantly chaotic. Nobody knew what to install. So the thing that I did was, okay, we need to like start shipping all these packages at the same version numbers so to preserve sanity. And we should do it at the same time. And ideally, we should ship it in predictable intervals. And I was looking at Chrome and Android and what those ecosystems were doing. Like, Chrome can ship a major version every 3 months. Android is shipping major version every year. Well, how about we do something in between, and we'll ship Angular major version every 6 months, but we need to do it in a way where it's like continuation of the previous version, so that while there could be breaking changes, they're minor breaking changes that people can get over. And if we don't make breaking changes, we will stagnate. If we make too many breaking changes, people will be unhappy with us and will not upgrade. So we need to make the upgrades very smooth. And I knew that Angular 3 was not a thing, because this router 3.0 was already launched. So I couldn't align all the package numbers. So I was like, how about we launch Angular 4 version 4? And I think that's going to get some attention, and it's going to like put some eyeballs on us. And that's going to be an opportunity to explain what we are doing and how we're going to evolve Angular in the future. So it was kind of like a marketing trick, but also necessity because of the NPM packaging and the versions that were already taken. So in order to realign all the NPM package versions, we had to go with 4.0. And I just kept on talking to everybody on the Angular team, just trying to convince them that this is what we had to do. And I don't think people were convinced, but also nobody was like against it. So like, okay, I would like to go to, I did a bunch of conference talks in 2016 and in the fall, and was like, I'm just going to announce this at one of the conferences. Does anybody have objections? And nobody said anything. So like, okay, so NGB is the place. So I went to NGB, which was a small conference. Nobody expected anything. And it was hilarious because I got there. I had nothing. I had all these documents that I built for the internal teams, but I didn't have anything else. I didn't have presentation. I arrived the day before the conference. And so we were just sitting around the table with the staff, with the organizers and some of the speakers. And like, so guys, I have a problem. I don't have a presentation, and I'm doing keynotes tomorrow. I know what I want to say, but I need your help. And I want to do this like open source experiment that I've never done before. And like, is anybody interested in helping out? And I just need a few people in a room. And Jürgen, the organizer of NGP, is like, yeah, we can get you a room. So they got us a room in the hotel where we were staying, or like a conference room. And to my surprise, like most of the conference organizers just show up and some speakers, and we're sitting around the table. I was like, okay, so here's the deal. I don't have a presentation yet, so we're going to build it together now. And I know what I want to say, but I think it's going to be very scary. So I need you to tell me how to say it so that it's not scary. But I tell them the whole plan about, okay, tomorrow we're going to announce Angular version 4. MD's just like, what? So I explained to them the whole thing, and they're like, okay, that makes sense. Oh, yeah, so it's not going to be very breaking. Like, and actually, I was like, well, version 4 is actually not breaking at all, because the only thing that's changing is we're going to change the TypeScript version. That's the only breaking change. So some TypeScript will be required to use a newer version of TypeScript, and that TypeScript version will probably throw new TypeScript errors, and you will have to fix those. Like, that's the extent of breakiness that version 4 will have. And we're going to launch version 4, I think it was like March or something, or like, this was December, I was like, March, and there was a date. We're like, this is the date. Angular, up to this date, has never shipped anything on time. But now there was a date, there was a version number, and there was like, this is what we are shipping. So anyway, like they helped me put the presentation together, and I just need like a lot of stickies. So like, okay, this is what I'll say. And then we finished around like, I don't know, 10 or 11 at night. And I went to the hotel room. I went to bed. I woke up at 3 and I built the deck. And I was finishing the deck as I was walking to the stage. I did not rehearse anything. And I gave the presentation, and it was good. I think it landed actually as well as I was hoping it could. Like, it was controversial, but it was well intended. And that was the moment when Angular went on this like 6 months cadence, and December, and predictable release schedule, minimal breaking changes. Eventually we had ng update that automated the breaking changes, all that stuff. And then we just started evolving and improving things little by little.
Igor, it was truly an honor to have you as a guest, and your insights into the early days of Angular and TypeScript provide our listeners with a unique perspective that was previously unknown to the Angular community.
I'm so happy to tell these stories, because there was a lot of pain, a lot of struggle in the history of Angular, and just a lot of sadness. But most of it is just like, it's a story of friendships and partnerships and people getting together and overcoming really hard problems together. I'm telling you the story from my perspective, but I could have not done what happened by myself. You know, Mishko was a big part of it. Mini Boita was a big part of it. Mark Jacobs and his bold move to adopt Angular for DoubleClick. Like, Brad Green was a big part of it. Like, so many people in the community helped to make Angular what it is today. And it's, you know, when people say life is a journey, then Angular is quite a journey. Yeah, maybe one day we'll get together and talk about, you know, what's next. And I, you know, I don't think it's the end of the journey. I think Angular, if you look at what's happening now, Angular is going through a renaissance, and it's not a surprise to me. Like, that, I was always hoping, like, back then when I was talking about Angular 4 and making evolutionary changes and improving things, like, my hope was that we could fix many of the mistakes we made in Angular version 2 and build the kind of framework that we always wanted to get.
Thank you once again for taking the time to share your experiences with us.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, Derek.